I'd like now to welcome back to the program Eric Jantz. He's staff attorney with the New Mexico Environmental Law Center. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Hi, Mary Charlotte. I appreciate the opportunity to be here again.
So we are talking today about fracking. What does fracking stand for?
Well, fracking is sort of the shorthand term for hydrological fracturing. And hydrologic fracturing is a method of oil and gas development recovery where it's mostly gas, natural gas, where a oil gas operator pumps fluids into a gas-bearing formation at very high pressure. And the fluids contain a number of chemicals, sand and water often.
And those things are pumped in. It's part of the process of getting this gas out. And it is the subject of tremendous contention because I guess it is effective for the people who are using it.
Right.
There's also tremendous worry and concern about toxicity.
Right, that's correct. So what happens is you have these gas reserves and they're in what's called tight formations. That is, that they're locked up in these formations that don't have a lot of fissures or fractures or anything like that in the geology. So under normal circumstances and using old technology, it was impossible to get to these gas reserves. With hydrological fracturing, essentially what you're doing is you're busting open, you know, these geological formations and allowing the gas to flow out into your recovery well. So there are a lot of issues involved in terms of environmental and public health issues involved with hydrological fracturing, and a lot of concerns that have been raised by community members where this kind of gas recovery has taken place.
Well, I mean, I've seen multiple documentaries on the subject that show people who open their tap, their kitchen faucet, hold a match up to it, and the whole thing catches on fire.
Right. So one of the problems with hydrological fracturing is because since it opens up the geological formation, amounts of methane can escape into other formations, and that's what you see when you see those faucets being caught on fire.
So that's methane that has leaked out from the fracking process.
Right, exactly.
And gotten into the groundwater.
Precisely. In addition to methane escaping during the fracking process, one of the concerns that communities raise is what exactly is in the chemicals that companies use to fracture these geological formations. And it's a problem because nobody really knows. The sort of granddaddy of all the hydrofracking companies is Halliburton, of Dick Cheney fame. And
so we know we can trust them.
Well, that's one way of looking at it, certainly. They've claimed that their frac fluid formula is a trade secret and shouldn't be disclosed to the public. At the same time, it's fairly, at least it's strongly suspected that what is in these frac fluids is pretty toxic. And of the chemicals that we know are in frac fluids, we know those chemicals are toxic in terms of both short and long-term health effects and their ability to pollute groundwater and the environment.
So you are right now, part of the reason you're on the radio is to bring attention to a hearing that's going to happen here in New Mexico in front of the Oil Conservation Commission. What's going on and when?
So the Oil Conservation Commission on November 17th and 18th is entertaining a petition from the New Mexico Oil and Gas Association, which is the New Mexico's Oil and Gas Producer Trade Association. It filed a petition with the Oil Conservation Commission to change the rules in New Mexico to require a certain amount of frac fluid disclosure, the chemicals that it, disclosing the chemicals that oil and gas producers use in their fracking operations.
So you're saying that the oil and gas producers want to change the rules to disclose more?
Precisely. At least that's the PR around this. Now, the fact of the matter is that the oil and gas industry across the country has suffered some pretty difficult PR blows in recent history with the BP oil spill, the concerns over hydrological fracturing across the country, not only in the West, but also in Pennsylvania and upstate New York with the Marcellus Shale.
Well, that Gasland documentary was amazing. I mean, that I'm sure that's made at least some impact in people's minds.
And I think that this is an attempt by the New Mexico oil and gas producers as part of a larger national strategy to rehabilitate their reputation and to build confidence in the eyes of the public. I mean, you see the commercials on TV about how clean and green natural gas production is.
Yeah, and it doesn't contribute to climate change. Oh no.
Exactly. I mean, that's part of the
That was sarcasm, ladies and gentlemen.
That's part of the image makeover that the oil and gas industry is going through. And so, you know, this petition by the oil and gas producers in New Mexico is part of that nationwide strategy to sort of polish their public image. And the fact of the matter is that the petition for rule change that they've made is a greenwash. It's a purely for show kind of rule. It doesn't really.
What would it require? I mean, what does it require, and what does it not require in your?
What the NMOGA oil and gas producers rule change would require is that they disclose the chemicals that they use in hydrological fracturing after they've completed the fracturing, in accordance with the terms of a website called FracFocus. And FracFocus is a effort by a consortium of governments with industry input to have a public clearinghouse for fracturing fluid chemical disclosure. But what it all it requires is that the operator post what it's already required to disclose based on federal law. So it doesn't require anything more than though it's already required under the Emergency Planning and Community Right to Know Act.
So basically, I mean, there's two things. Three things. One is that it would be after the fact.
It would be after the fracturing is completed, yes. 45 days, I believe.
45 days after the fracturing has been completed, then they disclose what was in it.
Yes.
Second, it would be according to the terms of this website. And third, everything they're doing, they're already doing or supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
And so now, government regulators, this is a question that I think everybody is concerned about, because we saw in the BP example, government regulators being very much in the hands of, or perhaps in the pockets of, the companies themselves, and not really taking the job on of protecting the public from the possible, you know, destructive acts of those companies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, what in this case, according to this website that is the consortium that you mentioned that is setting out the requirements. Are those requirements stringent and sufficient?
No, absolutely not. I mean, the requirements of the FracFocus website only require that the companies disclose the chemicals that are already subject to disclosure based on the federal law called the Emergency Planning and Community Right to Know Act.
So what is not required? In other words, are there chemicals used in fracking that can be kept secret?
Absolutely. So the FracFocus website only requires disclosure of the information that's already available publicly on the what's called the Material Safety Data Sheets, MSDS. Sheets that are on all your chemical containers. So anytime you say having a institutional bucket of bleach or cleaner or anything like that, it'll have an MSDS sheet. And the purpose of these MSDS sheets is to allow first responders and medical personnel to understand what a person's been exposed to. And
right.
It only talks about the acute short-term effects of these chemicals, and not every chemical is required to have an MSDS sheet. And some of the chemicals, in fact, a lot of the chemicals that are used in hydrological fracturing don't have MSDS sheets.
And so the rest of the chemicals that don't have those sheets, are they able to continue to be used without being disclosed under this new...
That's a tremendous loophole in the oil and gas industry's proposal. Yeah, and it's one that our clients, the Oil and Gas Accountability Project of Earthworks, wants to close. I mean, we've proposed an alternative that would require surface owner notification before fracking occurs and meaningful public disclosure of all the chemicals that are used in the fracturing process that will be disclosed in a publicly searchable database. And you can, people, if they're interested, can find out more about this on the Law Center's website at www.nmelc.org.
NMELC.org stands for New Mexico Environmental Law Center. So this hearing is coming up, and basically the oil and gas people are going to show up and say, look, we want to be transparent and do this full disclosure, and let's change the rules. And you guys are going to get up in front of the Oil Conservation Commission and say, everything that you're saying you're giving us is already there.
Right.
And the things that we need, you're not proposing in your supposedly new proposal.
Right, exactly. I mean, I think that the public deserves a meaningful disclosure, not just a publicity move, not just something that's going to make the oil and gas industry look like it's voluntarily stepping up and doing the right thing. I mean, if the oil and gas industry wants to do that, that would be great, and we'd welcome that. But this proposal from NMOGA isn't that proposal. It really is just a way to make the industry look good, at least initially, without actually having to make any meaningful changes.
So when is this and where? And are you inviting us? Are you inviting the people who are listening now?
It is a public hearing. Everybody who's concerned about this issue can show up and should show up. It's November 17th and 18th at Porter Hall.
That's Thursday and Friday.
Right, at the Wendell Chino Building on St. Francis, 1220 St. Francis Street, I believe.
1220 St. Francis here in New Mexico, here in Santa Fe. And just say the time and everything and days again.
It's November 17th and 18th. Begins at 9 o'clock, I believe.
And so when people show up, what do they do? Do they observe? Do they speak? Do they just show support? Do they hold signs? What is the public's role?
Any and all of those things. The public can testify in support or opposition of the petition. Or in support of opposition of our client, Oil and Gas Accountability Project's petition. Any concerns that the public has about chemical disclosure of fracking fluids, they can bring up at this hearing. They can submit written testimony. They can present oral testimony if they want. They can just come and listen.
Eric Jantz is with the New Mexico Environmental Law Center. Anything else before we go?
I just encourage people to come out and support OGAP and support the democratic process in this case. This is an important issue and one that's getting a lot of attention both here in New Mexico and nationwide. I think that the Oil Conservation Commission needs to hear from the public.
What is the Oil Conservation Commission?
The Oil Conservation Commission is the commission that's responsible for making all the rules that govern oil and gas development in New Mexico. So the infamous pit rule, or the famous pit rule, however you want to look at it, that was a rulemaking by the Oil Conservation Commission.
Right. And that was a rule that people who were interested in not getting their groundwater poisoned were in favor of. So this is a commission, it's a rulemaking body that at least historically seems to have taken into account the public good and safety and so on.
Yeah, in the recent past they have. The Oil Conservation Commission has taken a very proactive role in regulating oil and gas operations to protect environment and public health. It's finally taken, in the recent past, its responsibilities to protect resources other than oil and gas seriously.
Now, is it the same people who were there a year or two ago?
No, it's a different commission now. The chair of the commission is Jamie Bailey. Now, she was a former commissioner on the prior commission, but there are two new commissioners based on the elections from the last election cycle. One from New Mexico Tech, I believe, and one from the land office.
If in this process the rule, the new set of rules that the oil and gas people are proposing are accepted, what good and harm, in your view, would come from that?
Well, I mean, I think that it's... the good would be that it's probably better than nothing.
I mean, is it? I thought you said it's sort of the same as nothing because those rules are already
there. Well,
it kind
of is the same as nothing, except for the Frac Focus website. You know, at least you can do sort of a search on it rather than, you know, having to go to a site and get the MSDS sheets. You know what I mean?
So it's all kind of centralized in
one
place.
But I mean, it's not an easy site to search. So, I mean, it's not ideal, but I mean it's better, I suppose, than absolutely nothing, and it's certainly better than no disclosure at all. On the other hand, on balance, I think it does more harm than good because it does give, you know, the appearance that there is some sort of meaningful disclosure when in fact there's really not.
And so the idea is that any next attempt to ask for meaningful disclosure could be met with, well, we've already done that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that really is the fear. And oftentimes with these rulemakings, you get one shot, unless you're industry, unless in case you get a lot of shots. But for community people, you really, really is usually a one-shot deal. You get one shot at making these kind of progressive changes, and that's the way it's, you know, that's the way it's always been.
So you're going to propose a different set of rules in this hearing?
An amendment to the oil and gas industry's rules, that actually amend them to be something meaningful. I mean, they're not what we'd call ideal, but they're a huge improvement over what's being proposed.
Ultimately, do you think it would make the most sense to ban this process? I know that groups like Food and Water Watch, whom we've had on the air, are all for legislation that would ban hydraulic fracturing.
Right. Right. And, you know, I think that's an important discussion to have. You know, I won't say one way or another. I can't say one way or another. I haven't given it really enough thought. I mean, what I think is important are two things. One, that this discussion be had, and two, that the communities that are most immediately impacted by hydrological fracturing and oil and gas development should be the ones who get to say whether they want this kind of operation in their community. And I think that that's the position that Food and Water Watch takes, is that it's sort of a move to get local governments to ban hydrological fracturing within their municipalities or counties.
Eric Jantz, thanks so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Mayor Charlotte.
And once again, NMELC.org stands for New Mexico Environmental Law Center. I'd like now to welcome to the program Alexis Brown. She is from Girls Inc. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you for having me.
So what's Girls Inc. all about?
Well, it's an after-school and summer program for girls. We work with girls 5 to 15 most of the time, and we're doing more work with teens.
And an after-school and summer program, so basically there's this gap between when school ends and when parents come home and they go over to Girls Inc.?
Yeah, pretty much any time the girls are out of school, we have programs of some sort that where we can work with them.
And so what do you do?
Oh, that's a big question. So our programs are all experiential learning, hands-on experiences that give them the skills and attitudes and knowledge they need to lead successful lives. So that's a myriad of things. There's math and science, there's economic literacy, there's communication skills, diversity awareness and appreciation, kind of runs the gamut.
Math and science.
Yeah, that's one of our major programs. It's called Operation Smart.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And so what, like, okay, so kid come, young teenage girl comes home from, comes to Girls Inc. from school, and you start doing hands-on experiential math and science?
Yeah. So they'll, when we're doing that program, they'll do gardening. They'll learn farm to table. They'll learn about recycling and real changes that they can make in their lives that can have a positive impact on the environment. They'll learn about physics. They'll do computer work. They'll dissect things. So it's shows them that science is everywhere and science is fun.
And do you have, like, science teachers or former scientists, retired scientists doing that kind of thing?
We have had educators and scientists work with them in summer camp. But all our facilitators are trained or in the process of being trained to work with kids or have that in their life plan. They're all paid staff.
And so that's the math and science part. What were some of the others? Economic literacy.
Yeah, economic literacy, it ranges from teaching a five-year-old how to recognize different coins to how to make a budget, how to even the teen programs, which we haven't delved into quite as much as we'd hope to as we work more with teams, but the business plans, investing, things like that. And it also talks about the politics behind the economy, the pay inequity, issues like that.
Yes. So the 99% must be coming up.
It hasn't. So we haven't worked on that program this semester. But in the past, it's we had one group talk about pay inequity and how unfair it was. And the girls actually wrote a letter to then Governor Richardson and called him out about what he's doing to end pay inequity. So it also gets the girls involved in their community.
I think getting people, girls or boys, involved in knowing that they can exercise their constitutional right to petition the government is a really important thing, because once you do it and when you're young, it starts to come naturally.
Yeah. We have a program called She Votes, which of course only comes up during election season, but it gets the girls understanding the process, how to look at candidates, look at the reasons for why people might choose a candidate. Are they recognizing a name because their parents have said it, or did they hear it on the news? What kind of issues would they want politicians to address? And then how they vote and what the voting process is like and how they can stay involved in politics after that.
Do you follow, how long has this been going on? I mean, do you follow the girls beyond their Girls Inc. tenure?
We haven't, just because we're pretty slim staff.
Yeah.
But Girls Inc. used to be the girls' clubs, so we've been in Santa Fe since 1955. We've worked with third and fourth generations of the same family.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So Girls Inc. came from the girls' club. Is it, what's different? Is it reconstituted as a new organization?
Well, the Girls Clubs of America started in the late 1800s in Connecticut, I believe, as a response to girls moving to cities to join factories and get jobs.
Uh-huh.
So they were separated from their families, and Women's Auxiliary started this program to support them. Over the decades and century, it's changed. So there's affiliates now all across the country and Canada. We're all our own 501c3 nonprofits. We manage and govern ourselves. We implement programs that best support our own communities. But the programs that we offer come from a national office that does research on the needs of girls, develops the programs to address those needs. Once they pilot test them and know that they work, they give them to all the different affiliates to use.
So what are the needs of girls in particular, as opposed to children?
Right. Well, the needs of girls, let's see, in New Mexico and Santa Fe has very, very specific issues that girls face, one being the high rate of school dropouts. About 50% of high schoolers don't graduate with their freshman classmates.
But that's girls and boys.
That's girls and boys.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the issues that the girls face are still ones that maybe have become not stereotyped, but kind of old news with girls are good at English and boys are good at science. that girls are still addressing that. It's as girls age, when they're young, they love science. They get dirty,
right.
They get their hands in things. And as they age, they kind of move away from that. And there's all kinds of reasons society-based reasons that impact that.
Are they getting that from their teachers?
It comes from all over. It's media influence. It's peer influence. I wouldn't say that the teachers are doing direct action against girls being interested in science. I think it's much more of a societal impact.
Yeah. And so what are some of the other issues? I mean, there's academics and stuff, but then there's also personal and coming to terms with being female in this society kind
right.
of things.
Another one for New Mexico is now leading the nation in teen birth rates.
Is that right?
Yeah. So we've always been in the top three, but this year, we've reached the number one
position.
We're
number one mm-hmm. in teen birth rate.
And that accounts for girls keeping their babies if they're between the ages of 13 and 19. It doesn't account for girls that are unfortunately getting pregnant younger than that, which happens, and girls who choose to make other decisions besides keep their
right.
So they're big issues that
so
every
teen pregnancy is even higher, essentially, because yeah. some of those girls might choose abortion.
Right.
Why is that? Is Catholicism or what's
no,
going on?
No, it's a lot of different reasons. I think it's very particular to this community because of culture around it. If you think 100 years ago, people had large families for a reason. They were working farms. They had to support each other. Kids often dropped out of school at a young age so that they could work and support their family. And that has become part of the culture, even though the times have changed and the necessity for that has changed.
So what do you do in regard to all of that at Girls Inc.?
Well, our program is what we call Abstinence Plus. So we talk about abstinence as really the only way to be 100% safe when making decisions about their health and sexuality. But we also don't profess the answers. We don't tell them what they should or should not do. We work with the girls so that they know how to be empowered enough to say what they believe.
Now, do you do sex education?
It's part of it for the teen girls in particular, the younger girls. Everything's age appropriate.
Right.
And it's really discussion-based. We also work with the families. What is the core values of a family, and get them communicating with one another, giving them the tools they need to have healthy communication so that they can all be on the same page. Part of the problems come when talking about sex and sexuality and health and sex is really a difficult process. We've all had that experience ourselves
yeah.
in one way or another. It's not easy. So what we do is we give them the tools to make it as easy as possible to have that conversation so nothing's in the dark.
To have the conversation with whom?
Between the parents and the child.
Uh-huh.
So
do you find that girls are getting that at home? In other words, do they get to ask the questions about, you know, where they came from and what happens next and all of that stuff and have what you might call maybe reasonable, friendly discussions with their parents?
I think that it's the same as it's always been, that it's a difficult conversation. And if you're not equipped to have that conversation with your child, it often gets put to the side or left up to other people. But really the biggest obstacle is the number of messages that girls get about health and sexuality from the media and from society. They're bombarded with images, thousands a day, about health and sexuality. So they often get skewed or incorrect information and assume that it's correct.
And what are some of those skewed and incorrect pieces?
We did a workshop with teens at the Indian School a couple years ago, and before we decided to focus it on our preventing adolescent pregnancy program, we did a survey of the girls to find out what they knew about sexuality, and most of them said that they felt pretty knowledgeable, but when we got into the details of where did you learn this and what kind of things do you know, one girl said, you know, I learned about it from dirty jokes, or, you know, it's a lot of things that are not exactly factual, correct information. So who knows where they're getting it? They're getting it from TV, from the internet, from movies, from jokes.
But I mean, what are some of the things that you've seen? I mean, you know, considering this is a family show and all
yeah.
that are just plain old, like, totally incorrect pieces of information that they believed.
Well, I don't work directly with the girls, so
oh, okay.
I don't have a lot of those
yeah,
anecdotal
yeah.
comments. We do know that, I just know from experiences like that, that the information they have isn't really factual.
Now, we're talking to Alexis Brown of Girls, Inc. There is an initiative that you have called the Mind and Body Initiative. What's that all about?
The Mind Plus Body Initiative takes activities from a bunch of our programs that focus on very specific issues about mental and physical health. So positive body image, stress management, physical activity, and nutrition. And so those activities are meant to give girls the skills they need to make healthy choices about their mental health and physical health.
What kind of choices do you see them making? I mean, are they eating a lot of junk food?
Yeah, or not knowing how to, what a healthy snack might be. We help them. We do an activity where our usual snacks might be carrots or things that they're comfortable with. And we'll do an activity with them where we'll have a tray of all kinds of crazy fruits and vegetables that maybe they've never dared try before. And we encourage them to try whatever's on the tray, even if it looks weird. It's a strange color of green or whatever. And get them to open up their minds to eating other things besides a carrot and a cracker.
Right.
Yeah.
I know there's this I remember the moment as a child where I learned that artichokes were good.
Right.
Because to me, they had the word choke in them, so they scared me.
Right.
And so my mother basically made me try one, yeah. And I've been eating them ever since. Yeah.
And kids are very sensitive to strong tastes and weird textures, and so they automatically go to the safe foods
right.
for them. So this helps them open up to try new things. Also, working with our science program, when they actually grow food from the start, they're much more eager to try it out.
Right. And do you teach them to cook with it also?
We have had, you know, definitely garden-to-table projects with the girls.
What about physical activity, athletics, stuff like that?
Well, one of our main programs is with our teens, and it's called Encourage, and it's an outdoor adventure program, and it gets girls much more physically active. They do workouts every single day in the summer, and it all culminates to projects going camping for a while, you know, doing a 17-mile hike, and they do biking and river rafting, and we've done things with the Mountain Center, and they've done high ropes courses. And
the Mountain Center is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's
they're
so
amazing.
Yeah, we love working with them. And also through that program, we've partnered with NOLS, the National Outdoor Leadership School, and every summer we send teens on 1 to 3 week outdoor adventures in Idaho or South Dakota or Alaska. And they're doing long treks.
The basic theme of all of this seems to be empowerment, independence, and community.
Exactly. And we want them to have fun, even though every single thing we do with the girls is intentional and is meant to give them a skill and new knowledge. But they won't show up if they're not having fun. So everything we do with the girls also has to be engaging and exciting for them.
Now, who are the girls who show up? Is it something that they pay for? I mean, that their parents pay for? Or how does it work?
Well, the girls are very reflective of the Santa Fe community in terms of cultural background or socioeconomics. It's first come, first serve enrollment. So we don't enroll based on ability to pay. It's sliding scale. So we do have a set fee, but we work with the families to find the actual fee they pay that's most suitable to their income. And other outside influences. You know, you may fit on the chart in one spot, but you have all these other extenuating circumstances. So
right.
We work with the families. Tuition covers about 20 to 25% of our expenses.
And the rest you have to fundraise.
Right.
Now, you had a facility on the south side of town.
Yes. That was Zona del Sol. We're still a member of the Zona del Sol Consortium, which has been around for probably 15 years now. And it was formed by several different nonprofits with the goal of bringing their services to that growing community. We, along with the Y, had been implementing programs there in one building, and then that building got expanded, and the Y added their own building, and we took over this newly expanded facility. Unfortunately, all of that happened during the recession, and while we were able to easily increase the number of girls and families we worked with in that community and build relationships with them, we weren't able to increase our revenue as much as we needed in order to cover the overhead of having that operation there.
Yeah. So that went by the wayside.
Right. Well, in its current form. So we're working on trying to find ways to work with more families without that overhead.
So where are you actually doing all these activities?
Well, we're still in our center in downtown on Hillside Avenue.
Okay.
For our after-school program there.
That's a very cool place.
Yeah. It's a historic building. It's a fabulous spot. And we're doing more outreach, more collaborative projects, and we're trying to expand and really open doors with other people and partner in different ways.
Now, there's a number of ways that people can be involved. I guess, are you looking for mostly from the community women?
Women and men.
Okay.
Everyone can support girls. Everyone has girls and women in their lives that have impacted them. So this is open for everybody.
Yeah. Now you've got an initiative called Girlfriends.
Yeah, Girlfriends is a new program that we're starting. We've had a lot of interest from people in the past who learn about what we do and how we do it, and they get really excited, and they want to work with the girls. And so this is an opportunity for us to give deeper impact volunteer opportunities for the public, and it'll be connected to career days and other events like that. And in return, that group will help us educate others about the programs and opportunities that we offer.
And so, like, what is, let's say I sign up, what actually do I do?
Well, it comes with an annual fee, which goes to support the programs 100%. And it just started probably a month ago.
So the new
members are actually in a great position of they get to help create the program itself and what those opportunities are. What are people in Santa Fe looking to do? What interests them?
Right.
So
what are you seeing so far?
Definitely working with the girls, but finding, you know, there's so many details involved with that. How long are you willing to do it over, you know?
Right.
So figuring out those details, what will suit the community.
Do you ever have situations where a girl really needs a one-on-one relationship to deal with some of the problems? Because surely you've got kids coming in who've got some pretty serious family problems.
Yeah. Well, luckily we have a very low ratio between facilitators and girls, so that definitely helps with them having mentors and building relationships. We are hoping that the Girlfriends program will be another way for girls to have positive mentors in their life and build positive relationships with people.
What are the greatest problems that the girls face that you as an organization end up having to deal with in one way or another?
It's pretty across the board. I mean, if you can imagine what are any issues that an adult might face, those kids are also facing those issues. So they're also carrying the weight of their family issues, parents losing their job, not enough food at home, difficult with school, bullying is a huge one, dealing with that issue.
Do they get bullied by boys or by other girls?
All of the above, just in different ways. So boys are very much more direct with their bullying. Girls tend to be much more passive aggressive. So we have a program that works heavily with the girls on how to have open communication, to avoid conflict, to resolve conflict, and to not kind of take on the bullying tactics to harm their own self-esteem or to their, you know, deflect it and turn it onto other people.
Right. I wish we'd had those.
I do too. And I know a lot of people say, oh, well, that's part of growing up, getting picked on, that's part of growing up, but it really doesn't have to be.
Well, it's a traumatic part of growing up. That's like saying being beaten up is part of growing up.
Right.
It doesn't have to be that way.
It doesn't
way.
Have to be that way. And also now with social media, bullying has increased and kids are getting much more vicious because they're sort of removed from the situation,
Yeah. Even
removed from the act of bullying.
Right.
So it's a whole new world when it comes to that stuff.
What does that look like? People saying mean things to each other on Facebook or whatever?
Saying mean things on Facebook and taunting. It's just much more in their face than I would say in the past.
Well, yeah, and less in their face at the
yeah,
same time.
Exactly.
Very odd. Now, there's also another program that you have, Girls to Women Alliance.
Yes, the Girls to Women Alliance is a way for us to partner with women-owned businesses and women community leaders. it's an attempt to honor them for their contributions to this community, and also for us to have more doors opened to us and be creative in the ways that we do approach the way that we approach fundraising. For example, this event on Saturday that we're doing with Body, she's now a member of the Girls to Women Alliance, and she's hosting this event for us. And you know, we're partnering with her and kind of highlighting some of the services offered by her employees.
Well, let's talk about the event at Body for a moment. It's this Saturday, the 12th of November, from 5 to 7 in the evening. It's a benefit for Girls Inc., and it's at Body. Now, what actually happens there?
Okay, so it's going to be quite different from fundraising events that we've done in the past. It's not a sit-down, tabled event. What's happening now is that we're going to have workshops that address the different issues that we mentioned with the Mind Plus Body initiative, and we're going to have a facilitator or program staff person from Girls Inc. working with an employee from Body to provide a hands-on workshop for the guests, similar to how we would do it with the girls, so they get their own hands-on experience, discussion afterward, how to apply it to their real life on nutrition, body image.
So you get to be a girl.
Yeah, you get to be a girl for an evening and interact. There's going to be a lot of girls and families there, so they'll get to see what the girls actually think about Girls Inc. We're pretty excited. We think it's going to be quite fun.
And will there also be food?
Yes. Definitely, it's an adult event with kids there, but there's, you know.
So there will be girls there from
Girls
the program.
Inc., yeah. And there's hors d'oeuvres and wine and, you know, all that good stuff. The nutrition program I'm excited for, they're actually going to be making veggie burgers. Getting a recipe for how to do your own veggie burgers at home.
You know, a good veggie burger is a rare and beautiful thing.
Right.
The world abounds with mediocre and horrible veggie burgers.
Right. So this will be an opportunity for people to learn how to do their own, how to tweak the recipe, how to keep it healthy.
What's in it?
I don't know. I haven't taken the workshop yet.
We're talking to Alexis Brown of Girls Inc. Let's go back to this whole bullying thing. Let's say a girl is in a situation where she is being bullied by somebody. How do you help the girls? I mean, how do you, like, specifically, what does it look like?
Well, what we do is we start at a very basic, simple level of learning how to communicate in a healthy way. Even before they're faced with major conflict like bullying, it's how do you interact with the girls in your group on a daily basis? How do you learn how to use your own voice? How do you express your being upset at a situation? So that level of communication. And so take, for example, if a new girl at Girls Inc., maybe another girl steals her crayon. In her eyes, she sees that girl took her crayon, and she goes running to the facilitator and says, you know, Mary stole my crayon. In most situations, the girl is told, when something like that happens, come tell an adult and we'll help you take care of it. What we do is we say, well, what did you tell her? Did you tell her that upset you, that you took the crayon? So we help facilitate a conversation between the girls about that stolen crayon. Often what we find is it was really a mistake. Oh, I saw that crayon there. I needed the color blue. I picked it up because I wanted the color blue. I didn't steal it from you.
Right.
So we get them to realize that there's more than one perspective on a situation. And as the girls get more used to that understanding of how to communicate, they don't even come running to the facilitator anymore. They can say, I was using that crayon. Please ask next time. So, or if they want a crayon, they say, are you using this? Can I borrow it? So it takes out this authority figure that gets to make all the decisions for them. It empowers them that they get to use their own voice. It also shows them that they're responsible for voicing when they're upset, that you can't be passive about it. That person may have no idea that they hurt you. It's important for you to learn how to stand up for yourself and vocalize that. And of course, we've had conflicts with girls that have been much more serious, or you know, maybe someone got smacked, or maybe it was with our teen girls and a lot of gossiping going on. There was one summer a couple years ago where we had to put off doing some of the other programs because we had to spend so much time with that group of girls, really working with them, in understanding how to communicate with each other, that there was no cliques, there was no backstabbing, there was no gossiping, that they were a group and a team in its truest sense of the word, and they really needed to work and communicate with one another. And that when they were playing these little games with each other, it was being the opposite of productive. So,
and did they get it?
They did. Yeah, by the end of the summer, they hiked to the top of Hermit's Peak together. They camped out. They dealt with a bear.
They dealt with a bear?
Yeah, they dealt with a bear. That was one of the lessons.
How did they deal with the bear?
Well, they learned pretty quickly the importance of not keeping junk food hidden in their backpack. And those are the lessons that we eventually got to teach them after they learned how to communicate with one another.
I suppose there's nothing like having bears come prowling around your stuff to put things in perspective.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, Alexis, why did you get into this work?
Well, I'm from Santa Fe, and I'm pretty involved in the community in many different ways on a personal level. I've always loved nonprofit work. My previous job was at St. John's College, and while I loved the environment and the work I was doing, I wanted something that had a little bit more impact on the community in which I came from. And a friend told me about the position at Girls Inc. And I came to Girls Inc. one summer when I was maybe 8.
So you did this program as a kid?
I did, although it was much different back then. Even 20 years ago, it was really about homemaking skills. So there was a lot of baking cookies. And so that's why I only went for one summer.
Not your thing.
Not my thing. But in the 90s is when it switched. And the core of what we did with the girls really was about these empowerment programs. So that's what really intrigued me and made me want to be a part of that.
Girls Inc. is on the web at girlsincofsantafe.org. And once again, there's a benefit for Girls Inc. this Saturday, the 12th of November, from 5 to 7. It's at Body at West on 333 West Cordova Road. It's almost across the street from the Santa Fe Baking Company. And you can get tickets by calling 505-982-2042. And there will be hors d'oeuvres and drinks and workshops, ladies and gentlemen.
Fun workshops.
It really sounds like fun.
Yeah.
So, Alexis Brown, thanks so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you for having me.